Great. Thank you. I thought so. He might even want to try to sponsor in a pilot.
So she says, do you want to do this federal? And I said, if nobody else wants. But I said, we kind of agreed that barring somebody else stepped up.
Thank you for.
But I got to check them. She might change her mind.
Well, it will come back today.
I'll talk through them.
Okay. Can we last minute on February? Oh, no. Because we didn't have form though. So you're right. October 3rd.
2000.
Yep.
Yeah, we did have some subject that wasn't a real hero. Everyone's busy.
We were just down looking at it. If you got the time, I'll show you my new car. That's what I was going to just say. I do enjoy texting and interacting with
the live series.
I think you kind of get my weird sense of humor sometimes.
Yes. I have a weird sense of humor too.
All right. Well,
So normally they just automatically turn on as I boot up the system over there.
Oh, I see it blue now.
I just
turned it.
I'm hoping that let me know any manual of course.
There's something that needs to be here.
I think I'm gonna get to eat that to see you a little more stable internet.
We have 5 minutes.
Yep,
should be up. Yeah, so we're good.
You know, is that one in? The Quark support team of technology. It's always fun.
Okay, yeah, of course, I'll need two more. Hi there. No, we have two new committee members joining us today, and regrets, I've received regrets from Zane Hatchett and Caitlin Turley. Everyone else I haven't heard. Part of the problem is the agenda is 2 weeks, right? October 2nd meeting of the advisory committee meeting to order roll call.
Okay. Chair Brennan.
There. Committee Member Copeland.
Here.
Committee Member Gomez.
Here.
Committee Member Gustafson.
Here.
Committee Member Hatchett. Committee Member McLooney.
Present.
Committee Member Storm. Committee Member Stroh.
Here.
Committee Member Swint. Committee Member Turley. You have quorum today.
Thank you. I would like to welcome our new student into the welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You want to say a few words?
Sure, for sure. My name is Ramon Gomez. My name is Ramon Gomez. I live out in Punta. I grew up in North Monterey County, in the Southwest Park. After going to elementary school there, I went to Hazelton. The family went to Watson. I went to Watson High School and graduated from that in GC Sanders. Later got married. And now, you know, moved to Punta 15 years ago. In addition to serving here, I currently work as chief staff for Central Tennis Stores of Felipe Hernandez. And I'm a Monterey County Planning Commissioner. And I'm an elected official. I also serve on the North Monterey County Education District. Pleasure to meet all of you.
Chair Brennan, our online speaker is not here anymore, so please be mentioned the line.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Seth Gustafson. I'm a professor at Cal State Monterey Bay. I've got some personal and professional interests in air pollution, stretching back to the time when I led students with primary school in East London, where we used to live, to do some citizen science work there. And so I'm eager to continue on with those interests. My family and I, we live in Marina. And I'm glad to be a part of the board.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm the agenda as nomination and election of committee chair and vice chair. I am the current chair and Alan is the vice chair. I would like to nominate Alan Stroh, who was chair.
I am willing, unless there's somebody, I'm sorry, I'm willing, unless there's somebody else burning to, you know, maybe that, thank you, nothing.
Vice Chair?
I'd like to return the favor, if we should nominate you for the Vice Chair. That would be a flip flop that would be nice.
Are there other nominations? If not, Alan has been nominated as chair and Jenna Dunn as vice chair.
Can I ask a question? Oh, I'm not new to the meeting, so I wasn't sure. Do we have a process or is it just a nomination? Is there, do we rotate or how does it work? I wasn't sure. Do you have a process?
It's just the election and the committee, mm-hmm. No particular process. I was willing to speak.
Thank you
for the clarification.
This is just us.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion was carried. So, Alan, do you want to take this?
Okay, so let's get to the agenda. Is there any changes that need to be made to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to a public comment period. Do we have any members of the, you all look like staff?
And no comments were received at the office or through the mail.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is 7, accept and file summary actions for advisory committee meeting of October 3rd. And we need a motion to have to see 7.
I'll move acceptance.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 8, please accept.
Sir, please. Give you a second. Second. Thank you.
Is the motion approved?
Yeah, I'm a little confused because we passed it.
You can just accept without a motion.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I was a little upset about that. Accept and file summary actions of advisory committee for February 6th. I mean, should I ask, but anybody have any questions about that?
Nothing.
With no questions, we'll accept and file that. Number nine, receive an update on the air toxics program. Amy?
Good afternoon. I'm Amy Kleinwell. I'm the engineering and compliance manager here at the air district, and I'll just give Taylor a second to follow the slides.
They cannot see it online.
But I'll just get started and probably work on the slides. Each year we do an update to our air toxics program. And looking at air toxic is something that has a potential human health effect. And on the first slide, I provide the definitions of the federal and state, of course, have two different terms they use to define toxics. So in the Federal Clean Air Act, it's called a hazardous air pollutant. And then the California Air Resources Law Board calls them toxic air contaminants. And so these are chemicals like benzene or diesel particulate matter, which is emitted from engines that burn diesel fuel for power. And so this year, as you'll see in one of my slides, that was our focus, was we looked at some emergency generators and we have potential health risks from those. And this really got kicked off in 1987 with the passage of the Air Toxic Hotspots Information and Assessment Act, which we called AB 2588. And this is outlined in the Health and Safety Code, and it gives the parameters for looking at these toxic emissions from facilities in the state. And so this is partially what we're here to talk about today, is how we're still implementing this legislation. And I do want to point out, I said facility, so by that I mean all of the things at a location that could be emitting something. So sometimes you may have an engine at a gas station, and so we look at the emissions from both of those things and what are the health impacts of that. We also, every time the engineering department reviews a permit application, they look at the risk from that permit to make sure it meets our requirements. But that's just individually that permit. So what AB 2588 did was it said, was there risk from all of the things at a facility? So that's why it's a little bit different. Next slide, please. So this is a schematic of sort of the five-step process for air toxics hotspots. And I put a red bar in there to indicate if something screens out with the prioritization, and that's a way to use conservative assumptions to evaluate the risk. And if this comes out as a low or an intermediate, then they are considered screening out and they don't have to go forward with a further step of doing a full health risk assessment with more refined assumptions using a dispersion air model. And we have tools that the California Air Resources Board has developed for different types of sources. And you'll see in your document there, last year we did a bunch of gas stations, a tool was developed to do that. So as these tools are rolled out, we've been doing additional prioritizations of different facilities in our area district to figure out whether the health risk assessment is needed or not. Next slide. So the first three steps are looking at, you know, is this applicable? And in most cases, the answer is always yes. So the first step is to do an emission inventory. Figure out what are the emissions of all those toxic pollutants at a facility. And then we use those tools from the California Air Resources Board to assess the risk. And typically it's, like I said, a conservative assumptions. And so these are the prioritization scores. So low means that an acute or chronic risk is less than one, and the cancer risk is less than one in a million. And we use health values that are established by the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. They have a table of values that tell you what the acute, chronic, and cancer health values are. So we implement those values as we're doing these prioritization scores. And so intermediate is something that's equal to or greater than one for acute and chronic, and then greater than or equal to 1 in a million for cancer risk. And then the high facilities, they're greater than 10 in a million for cancer and greater than 10 for acute and chronic. And so those are the ones that would have to go to the next step, next slide. And that's where we pull in more refined assumptions. We take into try to take into effect meteorological conditions that might be more relevant to that location rather than conservative assumptions, and do this risk assessment. And in this case, if the risk is greater than 10 a million or greater than one, then that can trigger the public notification and the requirement to do a risk reduction plan. And the risk reduction plan means that you need to figure out how you're going to reduce those toxic emissions within 5 years to get below those thresholds in the state. Next slide. So this year, actually, Taylor was a major contributor to this, so thank you, Taylor. He does more than just the slides for our show. We looked at emergency generators, and the California Air Resources Board and the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association recently adopted new guidelines to address risk from diesel engines. And so we used that tool and evaluated 287 emergency engines. And we used really conservative assumptions to do this. And in most cases, we used very limited limit of hours of operation. So for example, emergency generators allowed to operate 50 hours per year for testing and maintenance to make sure that if the power goes out, that engine will turn on. And so 50 hours was used for examples of one of some of these engines, which is typically a lot more than they actually operate for maintenance and testing. A lot of engines just operate 15 to 20 minutes a month. And so we use those types of conservative assumptions. The other thing that goes into this is the proximity of receptors. So if you've got an engine that's located at a drinking water tank, so the pump for that drinking water will operate if the power goes out, that proximity to those receptors, those houses near that engine may result in the risk being higher. And so we did this because we were trying to screen out which engines do we need to look at more carefully for those refined assumptions and do the dispersion modeling to make sure that the risk is not into that category. So we came up with 36. So those 36 will go through an additional round of more refined dispersion modeling now that we've done this first step with those conservative assumptions. I also did want to mention that the other thing that Taylor did this year also was the state now requires us to report toxics emissions annually. And so the emissions are now also reported to the California Air Resources Board annually through a tool that's called the HARP, the Hotspots Reporting Program tool. And one of the modules in that tool is the emission reporting module. And that's what Taylor used to put all the data in and send it off to HARP. Next slide. So future activities for us, we're going to complete the remaining sources that we have finished in the aggregate military, some of the solid gas stations. The California Air Resources Board and the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association are working on another tool right now, and it's for auto body shops. So we're waiting for that guidance to be completed, and we'll look at all the auto body shops. And then this year, we added an additional program support. We added in to the budget to have an engineer on staff. And so we completed those interviews and looking forward to having another engineer on staff that will help us do things like look at those additional high risk emergency engines, but those 36 to do the refined disorder modeling. And so we'll be able to have a special support for this program moving forward. So I would like to take any comments and ask you to accept the report. Yes.
Hi, I'm Sandy Goldberg.
Hi, Sandy.
I'm a director at the Ottawa Settlement Institute. And I'm the director of at the board of the Ottawa Settlement Community Service District.
Yes.
And I was reviewing the agenda and the various reports that you have here. And on page 57,
yes.
At the top of the page, the Ottawa Settlement Institute.
Yes.
And it lists two emergency engines. Which were out of compliance.
Yes.
Those engines were replaced in 2022. So I have an issue with this report because if it's saying that these are all the companies that we found a problem with, then that should be stated somewhere in the report. If it is what we seem to believe is current, then it's not that.
So these two emergency generators are actually in the intermediate category, which is acceptable. It would be only if they were rated into the high category that it would be a concern. So the intermediate categories would meet our requirements. That's why they would have a permit to operate.
Why would they even be here after they've been replaced? Why would they even be listed on this?
Because we look at all of the permitted emergency generators.
You're saying that this is a report of all of the equipment that you looked at over some period of time.
Yes.
That should be stated in there, I believe, so that we know that there's not a current report. Because it isn't current if equipment has been replaced throughout this.
This is based on whatever the current permit reflects for the engine. So if the engine were replaced in 2022, these values would be based on the engines that are currently listed on the permits. So it would be the engines that they have permitted.
I'm not making myself clear. You issued a report, and either this report should have said at the beginning of the report that these are all of the findings of the equipment that we tested. That would be one thing, but it doesn't speak to that. What I believe it says is that currently these are the pieces of equipment that are currently being in use, and this is the status of this equipment. But that's not accurate if equipment has been replaced. It's not there anymore.
Oh, you're saying those engines don't exist anymore?
They don't exist. They were replaced in 2022.
But were they replaced with nothing, or is there an engine still
there?
No, there
are new engines there that are compliant.
Right. So this report's not saying they're not compliant. It's just saying that we evaluated the risk from those engines that we would have permitted in 2022, and it came out, the score values came out that they were intermediate.
Well, then it would be a worse than death or anything. But I think what you're saying is that when you ran this report, these are all the pieces of equipment that we found an issue with.
No, these are all of the engines that we identified to evaluate under 2588.
Several years ago.
No, this year.
That's not true. Those two pieces of equipment were not in service. They weren't there. So you didn't evaluate it. Nobody came to the well sites and said, aha, these engines are out of the plan. Or whatever, but they aren't because they're brand new engines, which were certificated.
Right. So we don't do emission evaluations. This is a tool. So in the document it says we used a tool that was developed by the California Air Resources Board, and we put in the values into this conservative tool to look at the engines and evaluate.
Let me put it another way. If you have 500 engines here that are out of compliance, that are not perfect, then you need X amount number of people to monitor these pieces of equipment. But if there's only 100 pieces of equipment that are actively in use, then you need less people to monitor. Isn't that true?
We don't actually monitor the engines. We couldn't permit an engine if it wasn't compliant. So all of the engines in this table are compliant because they have a permit.
A few minutes ago, you said on your report that because of the size of this thing, we need more engineers. We need to add another engineer. And my position was, or my question is this. If the equipment that the state is here isn't here anymore, or has been replaced, wouldn't that affect the number of people that we need to investigate? So
from perspective, we have about 1,200 emergency generators, so we've only been able to look at 287 so far. And the tools we're using are all computer tools, the dispersion modeling and these prioritization score tools. And so we need another engineer because, Taylor could only do 287 out of the 1,200. So we do need additional support.
For clarification, two engines that you looked at Palmer Road, Sunny Mesa.
Yes.
And intermediate results.
Correct.
And that was your recent group.
Yes, that was.
And that's what the report reflects.
Correct.
That's not true. You didn't. Somebody did not come out and look at those engines and say that's what it means on, because those engines are in compliance. They were old engines going back to 2022.
I think some clarification it needs to be had at this point. I didn't hear you say that they were not in compliance.
Correct. They could not have a permit.
This is just a certain type of engine that you're reviewing to come up and score whether you're in compliance or not. Or as you said, they wouldn't have a permit in the first place,
right,
for you to look at.
Yes.
So that the fact they have a permit means they are in compliance, which is a separate issue from what we're discussing right now, at least the way I'm understanding everything.
Yes. We don't actually physically go to the engines. These are computer tools that were developed by the California Air Resources Board that we use on our computer to look at the emissions.
Right. And I don't have an argument for that. You're really good to your concern on me. The only concern is that somebody who looks at the report and they immediately say to themselves, Harvard City Major has a group that's killing cancers in the sky, in the air. And I'm asking, why even have Bottle Sunny Mesa there? Why shouldn't we just omit it? We left you, we edited it out. If the equipment doesn't exist.
You're saying this equipment does not exist?
It does, it would be replaced for new equipment.
Well, and the new equipment was evaluated and found to have an intermediate.
I called the manager yesterday. I had the event in front of him. Hey, what about you? You can tell me the stuff. And she called somebody and they said, no. No, they're not good. There's nothing there for you. Well, maybe I ask you to look at it?
Sure, of course. I'll go back and pull it from the class. Well, yeah, no problem.
With that.
Sure, yeah, I'll follow up with you. Are there any other questions? Well, sure.
Chair, I just, in terms of AB 2588,
And I'm assuming that they find what can be tested. Is there any new things we're going to be testing for anytime soon?
No, typically emergency engines don't get tested unless they usually not diesel engines. They might get an initial test if you add on a control device to a diesel engine, then you might have to do an initial test to prove that it meets the emission limits. But typically a diesel emergency generator doesn't need to do any kind of testing, but something like the power plant in Los Angeles does testing every year. So it depends on what the thing is that we're permitting, whether or not testing is required. Gas stations are tested every year. So it depends on what's getting permitted.
I've got a question.
Sure.
You mentioned 1,200. Is that the number of permits, applications, or active
generators? That's the number of active emergency generator permits. We have over about 3,000 total permits, but as you can see, a big chunk are emergency generators, and they continue to be like the majority of the application types that we're getting, because it seems like more and more people want that backup power for whatever reason at different types of sources.
And of the 3,000, do you have any estimate or any data as to just how accurate that is for how many are actually out of the community?
No, but we have a team of inspectors, and you know they go out and find unrelated things quite often, but that's really the only way. Or if someone calls and complains and we go out and check something out, maybe there's something unpermitted. But that's those are the two ways you might find unpermitted things. Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a question. So you've got for future activities different source categories. I'm just wondering how you establish the source categories, whether they're analyzed on a rotating basis, or what's the origin of those categories?
Sure, we started out with, I think this is in the report, the greater than 10 ton per year sources. And so that was one subset. And then it makes it more efficient if you can kind of group things into categories to get it to evaluate them. And you use the same tools to evaluate that type of source. And so we try to group things into logical categories based on the permits we have. So we do have several, like the aggregate crushing operations in the three counties. So it's kind of a logical thing to put those together. Then based on the tools that the state has developed for capacity, for example, that's why we do those. So that's kind of how we came upon those next group of categories.
Since I don't hear any other questions, thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you. Nothing online. No questions on the agenda.
Okay, item 10,
Yeah, so this program is we bring to the board every year for approval of projects through funding that we receive from DMV fees. The MBARD receives $4 off of every registered vehicle within the three counties. And so we use approximately half that those funds to grant projects to reduce emissions from mobile sources. So Eli is going to give you a presentation on this program for this year, and it's a review of the applications, and we're looking for your guidance on the applications we got and the priorities that we've brought forward.
Good afternoon, members of the advisory committee. My name is Ivanas, and I'm the head of the presenting the information about the AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Pollution Reduction Program, including staff recommendations for project funding. Senate Bill 2766 provides a revenue stream for programs to reduce air pollution from motor vehicles and for the various functions that implement the California Green Air Act. Here, MBARD receives $4 per DMV vehicle registration in Tri-County area. Funds are then allocated based on the populations in each county. Next, I'll outline the current programs. Clean vehicle program funds junior and heavy duty electric vehicles for public agencies. The maximum award is $200,000. The clean air management program is for public agencies to develop electric vehicle and active transportation infrastructure. The program can help local governments electrify their fleets and provide more and better access to public paths for biking and other green mobility options. Maximum award is $200,000. All projects are ranked using the latest emission reduction methodology. Here's a breakdown of the budget and the application submitted. While the budget is $1.3 million, the sum requested from all three counties was $3.5 million. Looking at the table, you can see, for example, Monterey County has a population of approximately 430,000. With respect to the budget of 1.3 million, that leads to a population-based funding allocation of approximately 730,000. That third column from the left shows each county's population-based funding allocation. The total request column to the right shows that each county requested more than the population-based funding allocation. The column on the far right shows that each county's recommendation was based on population. Here are three tables. Recommended project funding per county. Monterey blue, San Diego green, and Santa Cruz red. This cycle, there were 18 applications. 13 recommended projects are widely distributed across the three counties and well maintained cost effectiveness. So we'll go into this in detail project by project. The direction of the slides will be downward in the 3D tables top to bottom. This project is to install EV infrastructure at the City of Salinas Public Services Fund. Staff recommend $2 million. This project is to install EV infrastructure at the City of Salinas Florida Community Park. This is a part of the children. Staff recommend approximately $84,000. This is the City of San City Street Sweep Replacement Project. Staff recommend $200,000. This project to install EV infrastructure at the Union Coast Water District headquarters is already in progress. The eligible costs for this project are specific to the additional electric vehicle charging stations that will be made available based on the additional MBAR funding. And that recommended eligible amount is $86,600. This project is to install electric vehicle charging stations at the City of Soledad Community Center. Staff recommended approximately $167,000. That amount is the remaining allocation available for Monterey County's project applications. This is the Monterey Salinas Transit Project to replace two old gasoline buses in the RIDES Power Transit Program. There are no remaining 82766 funds to allocate to this project. This is the County of Monterey Roundabout Project for Pluto. This was not an eligible project application under the current program. This is the City of San City project. Over the last few cycles, the same project has been awarded $205,000. Staff recommend that the City of San City continue working on securing other incentive funds that may cover a majority of the approximate $10 million in construction costs. The allocation for all projects from San Diego County was approximately $117,000. The best spread the eligible funding among applicants, staff recommending 100,000. The St. Slope Water District requested funds for EV infrastructure. Last cycle, that operation was awarded 200,000. The best spread benefits within San Diego County across fiscal years, staff recommend that the remaining funds go to other eligible applicants. The County of San Diego requested funds for battery charging stations at two locations. Staff recommend approximately 17,000. That value is the remaining allocation amount to San Diego County Bank of Applications. The allocation for all profits for the County of Santa Cruz was approximately 440,000. This County of Santa Cruz General Service Project would need to support costs for three EV charging sites, those three stars on the map. Staff recommend 200,000. This cycle, this University of California Santa Cruz project was the only publicly accessible level 3 charging station that funds were requested for. The proposed site was well situated for both the university and the wider community. Staff recommend 100,000. This County of Santa Cruz Public Works project will support three EV charging sites, those three stars on the map. Staff recommend approximately 144,000. That amount is the remaining allocation for Santa Cruz County Public Applications.
The one way at the top, is that someone else about it? Or?
That's Felton, public servant. Okay. Santa Cruz County Grants Regional Transportation Committee requested 200,000 for bikes and in public bike program. There are no remaining EV funds, 766 funds to allocate this project. The city of Watsonville invested 200,000 in funds for improvements and repairs to the 7 mile student trail network. There are no remaining EV funds, 766 funds to allocate this project. Here's some information about another potential funding source. There's some EV 2766 project allocations. The Community Air Protection Program, CAP, is specially for projects in statute-defined disadvantaged areas, parts of Salinas, Salina, and Watsonville. Some EV 2766 project applications may be eligible for CAP funding. If some projects are funded in CAP, EV 2766 funds can be directed to other projects. Recommended amounts for other EV 2766 projects could be increased. When project applications not already recommended funding may be considered. Here are some statistics on the electric vehicle incentive program. This is a separate non-competitive component of the 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program. This program provides incentives to residents to purchase or lease a clean vehicle. The applications are accepted on a first-come, first-served basis, and we started with 500,000 in funds on July 1st, 2025. As of September 29th, 2025, there are 221 applications, and 59% of project funds have been made. Thank you. Questions?
I am one here.
Microphone, please.
So, in Watsonville, made the grocery store by putting in charging stations. And I presume that could be throughout one of the town halls. So why is it necessary for us to add to that? Why not just rely on the public sector to provide the charging stations?
The charging stations that are applied for here are for public agencies. Some of these projects are publicly accessible stations, such as supermarkets. big focus of our electric vehicle infrastructure programs are to support medium and heavy duty vehicles. When we target wood yards that have, for example, the city of Sinaias or in Falmouth or Groom or in Santa Cruz, when we target those yards, we're creating infrastructure for those medium and heavy duty on road diesel vehicles to be polluters. And that's something that is the publicly accessible stations by a different market.
So the battery charging stations that you refer to are for public vehicles. This time, is that
there's a good mix of both.
They're not for the general public to use.
There are some projects that were recommended that were just for medium and heavy duty vehicles, just for yards or public agencies.
Right.
But there are some that are for that would be for installations on county-owned properties, city-owned properties that the staff would use, that city-owned vehicles would use.
Yeah.
It would help those fleets transition. And then those stations might also be open to the public.
Why?
A lot of parking spaces are in vehicles, and it makes sense to make these stations available for public use to promote the electric vehicles.
So, if it's a public service employee that's using the vehicle, they're using a town vehicle, state credit card, or some kind of access card. So, you're suggesting that, or are you saying that a private individual can go in there and without such a card, use it also?
There's different softwares and ways to set up stations for use. There are situations where there are locks, where you have to have a key and a code to use the system. Sometimes the stations might be fully publicly accessible. That can be up to the preference of the owner of the station.
Well, the owners of the stations are it's in the public sector, isn't it?
Yes. These are all public entities that are applied to these buildings.
Okay.
Just want to make a comment. We have a station here at the district that's available to the public, but it's available through ChargePoint, which is
available to
anybody
who has a credit card, has credit card readers, so you can separate
a
corporate card from a credit card.
It'll work.
And
then the other part of why we are focusing our attention on EV infrastructure is
chicken and egg
type deal.
So people want to adopt the use of electric vehicles and
have the benefits of those, but maybe there's not enough
charge stations out there to
make them
useful to go to certain areas because the range anxiety
or the availability might be
not be in areas that
people would want to
go because they don't have access to a charger. So I think if we have more chargers out there
available, then people will be more
likely to adopt
an electric vehicle.
Okay. You have any questions?
One of the advisory committees I served on asked about applications from SEPs. I know that there's only one here. Is there an outreach to the South County? Or?
I think there's very personal outreach to all a lot of schools, public agencies. Getting City of Soledad to participate is a way. They last participated 15 years ago, but before that, the early 90s. There's not always a lot of money to transition right away across the South and the cities, but we do a lot of outreach.
Any other questions?
I don't know if you have any demographic mapping data, right? More mapping data as to where the applications are coming from in terms of the e-vehicle program. Secondly, I wanted to ask, are you anticipating more applications coming in before the end of the year because of the change in federal law, or will that have any impact on the number of applications we get for EV vehicle?
Yeah, electric vehicle incentive program, EVA, is generally very popular. I've noticed that it's been very popular in the past month as the federal tax credits have been that many have supposed. So there's been a change overall in this side compared to last year. I'd say that the people are trying to take advantage of that federal tax credit. And if the window just closed, if that trend is true, we'll find out next week we're doing. We keep address data on all of the applicants for EVA. We don't run a map or find out where most products are coming from, but that is possible.
I think it'd be helpful information because it's possible to see maybe we could get better outreach to some communities than we are doing. That might help us target certain areas better than that. That's all.
Okay, I don't see any other questions.
Did you ask
a couple? I keep forgetting we got people sitting down there. I thought there was some reason.
No public comments online, and no one here from the board room.
Okay, it's been a while since I think it's. Anyway,
we did okay. Look at
thank you.
Hi. Okay, Ms. Vaughn, you can speak.
Okay, if you can hear me, that's great. My name is Ellen Vaughn, and I'm from UC Santa Cruz.
We can't hear you. Ms. Vaughn, you're unmuted. Please speak.
Can you hear me now? Nope. Okay.
We can't hear you.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Ms. Vaughn, can you try speaking again?
Yeah. Hello. Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Oh, well, that's okay. I'll just lower my hand.
More time. Ms. Vaughn, can you hear us? Can you raise your hand to say if you can hear us?
Can I chat?
It shows that you're talking, but we cannot hear you in the room.
Okay. Don't worry about it. Take care.
Hold on. We'll try to work on it on our side, too.
Hello, can you hear me? 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 That's okay.
I think we've been chatting on chat. I see two.
Okay.
See if we can chat. I'm not sure.
That's okay. Oh, hello. Can you hear me now? Hello, you're able to hear me now?
Okay, Ms. Vaughn, I'm promoting you to a panelist. Can you try speaking now?
Yes, can you hear me now?
I see you.
That's okay.
Don't worry.
She's waving bye-bye, but we still, could you type it into the chat?
And then I can repeat it here. I apologize. Oh, she said, please proceed without her.
Just one more question. About the CAP program that you mentioned for, and I saw that you highlighted that for some of those agencies that did not get funding. Could you do me a favor, send more information when you afterwards and share it with us? Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Vaughn wrote her comments in the chat. Hello, just supporting UCSC's level 3 charger. Thanks. Ellen Vaughn, Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-A-N, UC Santa Cruz.
I'm going to fix a little extra on this thing about that. Okay. We've got an item of 11. On the agenda, and we received the monthly dwelling report from the Rail Pollution Control Officer, and I understand Richard Stedman came up there today.
Richard Stedman apologizes for not being here, but he's asked me to fill in for him. So just give you a few highlights that have been going on around the district the last few months since the advisory committee last met in February. So it's been a while. So you might have, for engineering and compliance divisions, you might have noticed in the news recently that Rich was interviewed on Monday on KSBW because we received a series of odor complaints from the public in areas around East Garrison, Marina, Seaside, and Long River Road in Salinas. We've been investigating potential sources such as standing water and ponds, sewers, wastewater treatment plants, landfills, and agricultural operations. And the odors in East Garrison along River Road and Salinas were identified to be two separate agricultural ponds. The operators are working to address the issue. The complaints in Marina and Seaside are still being investigated. I think it has to do with the warm weather recently and the humidity. There's a lot of growth from algae on ponds in the region. So, still looking into it, and we'll probably report back.
Did you get any involvement into that organic phosphate that issue that someone used it on there?
You know about that?
People being exposed from air pollution.
We don't see that.
I'll just encourage you.
Okay. Let's see. We had a public notice for Monterey One Water to modify their existing anaerobic digestion system to include co-digestion of food waste. This is the first food digestion project with food waste took a permit issued by Monterey Resources District that represents another method for converting food waste from landfills. Monterey One Water will benefit from additional digester gas, which will offset natural gas and fuel the cogeneration facility on site. In July, the Air Resources Board's enforcement team was here conducting joint inspections with Environ inspectors at three landfills, Johnson Canyon Landfill, Monterey Peninsula Landfill, and Buena Vista Landfill, provided an opportunity for inspectors to get training from CARB for monitoring methane leaks over landfills. So CARB has been out here a lot lately. So it's we've had it in air monitoring. We just finished a technical systems audit, which happens every 5 years. So it's an in-depth look at our air monitoring program. EPA contracts with CARBs to come out, do the audit. It was pretty grueling. Spent a week in this room going over all kinds of documents. We've been out in the field with CARB. And they take a deep dive into our collection and analysis and validation of data. Because data is what drives us here. It's all about making sure that our programs are actually effective. So air monitoring stations are critical in that we take the audit seriously and we provide the Air Resources Board with everything they ask for. And we use this opportunity to improve. So we're still waiting for their report. It actually went well. There's some things that we need to work on, but that overall our programs are functioning really well. This came on the tail of an annual audit that we had 2 weeks earlier. So our air monitoring staff was had a lot to do last month. In planning, we've been working with the Department of Toxic Substances Control and the Army on 287-acre burn that the former Fort Ward is conducting. It's the last of two burns that they're planning. A few years ago, the firms got diverted, the funds for learning got diverted to building a wall at the old Fort. So now they have funding and they're going to continue with the burns. Just because it's a surplus item, in other words, Superfund site, local agencies don't have any authority over what's going on there. But the Army does ask us to be involved, ask for concurrence on appropriate days to burn so that we get the best dispersion possible. But we also get the opportunity to divert all the complaints that come in to the Army, which is an advantage to us.
So,
so some of you will probably be hearing about that.
Do you have an idea of when? Sorry. You have an idea of when those burns will happen? Certainly.
This is the time of year that the conditions are best. The burning, the vegetation will dry. We get long winter days, and we get direction from the energy. They reviewed our farm water model grant programs, a program that we use to we channel funds from the state to replace tractors, old dirty tractors that have been burned. We're getting some security from CARB and some more of the assistance. How can they help us with that? So then we cooperate and take their comments with seriously. We received 20 industrial sized air purifiers from the Air Pollution Control Officers Association from a grant through CARB to establish clean air centers. There's 12 there in the region. We take that, we've asked the county of San Benito and Santa Cruz County Office of Resource Recovery and Resilience to establish clean air centers so that people can have an opportunity to escape smoke from wildfires. We're working with Monterey County to try to find another location in this region. Wood stove changeout program launched in September. We're offering centers to replace non-EPA certified wood stove fireplace inserts and open hearth fireplaces with cleaner home heating devices. You get $2,500 to replace an old wood stove, $5,000 for replacing it with a heat pump. So it's a good opportunity. It's only available to disadvantaged communities, low-income areas, and low-income applicants. And it's funded through our Community Air Protection Program funds and through the Clean Air Fund, which is a fund that's established for from settlement violations. On the average side, we had a request from Mount Toro High School in Salinas in August. We did it was their back to school night, and we just had tables up. So that's a disadvantaged community in that area. So we attended and promoted our landscape exchange program.
We got an enthusiastic response from them. This weekend, we've got at Watson High School, we have a, it's called Vermont Up,
which is a, it's going to be electric vehicle promotion for them to the light and time them.
And Dalton, at Henry Cowell Edwards on October 11th, we have a good fire there. That's coming us.
Promoting good fire.
There's fire living backyards living. So we'll be there to help promote. Yeah. How do we do that? This is an impact on the
community.
What else? Last few items we've got with staff. We recognized one of our engineers last month at board meeting. Armando Jimenez, for his good work, working on a pilot project
for pyrolysis unit.
And the region, Monterey property, pyrolysis is used to convert green waste into biochar. It's a new project. And Armando went above and beyond to cooperate with the applicants
and to get this project completed. So we congratulate Armando for that.
We have a new administrative assistant, Eden Gonzalez. We also have a new inspector, Michael Hamaguchi. Our own Michael
Ruganen.
Thank you, Your Highness. He is an air quality specialist,
air quality technician, and he has been promoted to air quality planner. And we are currently in the process of hiring an engineer and another air quality technician.
Finally, we've got, we received a grant from
PG&E to install a heat pump, water heater in our office.
They've got a lot of energy savings from this benefit to reducing emissions from natural gas. And the best thing is we got free from PG&E.
That was good.
And then another point of note, we have received from the
special district
the risk management board. We're being recognized for having no paid claims to workers' compensation program for the last 5 years. So very environmental safety here, and we take our safety seriously for our staffs. That's pretty much the highlights. Do you have any questions for that? Good afternoon.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. And, as a follow, my future agenda items, anything in mind that you recommend to the
Yeah, so I'd like to propose two items. One is, while my understanding is that California rules are a bit more robust than a lot of federal rules, I'd be very interested to hear from staff if there's been any changes with recent EPA rules that affect how we do any reporting or monitoring for any of the activities we do here, or funds that are available to the activities that would otherwise be from the federal government. So that would be an area I'd be interested in thinking about. And then the second topic is, I live over in Marina, and there's a lot of new homes coming online every day in the Sea Haven area and the Shea Homes area. And I'm curious if the district does any outreach to new homeowners when it comes to anything they should be aware of. As far as, obviously, they're going to know all new equipment, all new appliances and everything, so maybe they're less likely to be a risk factor when we talk about emissions. But, you know, is there anything worth outreaching for them as new members of the community? Thank you.
Anybody else have any suggestions for future agenda items? We have a lot of new members, so hopefully you can think about it in that future meetings. We're really endeavoring to try to make these meetings as relevant as possible in the future. It's was disheartening to me that we hadn't had a meeting since last October. She's been hiatus. But I also don't think we had a meeting since we had meetings. So we do serve with the actual board. I think that's an important aspect of it. And also, you get a lot of information there that hopefully will spark some ideas and thoughts about even other things to get involved into this community. But that's up to the committee members to do some brainstorming themselves and help us all have good, relevant meetings that have forums. So, and that's also my chairman's comment, so I'll wrap up two in a month. I have 14, I'll jump to 14 then, and comments from committee members. Okay, seeing none, I will go to the adjournment.